Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish the book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. And joining me today is Juliana, my girlfriend. Say hello to everyone.
Hello, everyone.
And today we are going to be reviewing a strange book that I found because I was looking up online because you've recently been reading Brave New World.
Yes.
And
still reading it.
Still reading it. So you're not finished
16
it.
Pages 16 pages to go.
16 pages. But yeah. You were saying, hey, let's read Brave New World, blah, 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 Brave New World, blah, blah, blah. And so we'll talk about that in a bit. So I was looking around and found this very small book. It was in the bookshop around the corner because we live around the corner from a secondhand English bookshop here in Berlin. And in the cellar, they've got like 25,000 books. I don't know. I don't have many books. They've got many, many books in the fantasy cellar. I've talked about it on the podcast before. And so I found this book mentioned on... Oh, let me put it this way. So I found this book mentioned on the internet in relation to Brave New World because I was like looking at the context of that, like what other books are around at the time. And this book was written. This book was written a little bit afterwards, a few years afterwards, 1936. Do you have? I opened the Wikipedia page for Brave New World
wrote
here.
In 1932.
1931, published in 1932. It says here.
Okay.
So published 1932. So looking at this different kind of stuff, I found this book called We Have Seen Better Days by Alexander. Now you said, how did you pronounce this one, Alexander?
Peacock.
Paychuck, you were saying before. So
Paychuck.
Paychuck. So we're not quite sure, but I know there's a juggler called, there's a juggler or a team of jugglers called the Paychuck Brothers or something like that. But now, but after you said Paychuck and I was saying Paychuck, now I can't remember which way round it goes. So it's We Have Seen Better Days. This is actually comes from 1936. And because it's such a short book, small book, that we thought we'd like one of these pulpy things. And I always find it amazing that these classic books that we see now, like, you know, 1984, when you see the original covers of these books, like 1984, the original cover, it looks like a 1950s movie poster, like,
yeah,
you know, science fiction-y movie poster. What were we looking up the other day? The Forbidden Planet movie poster and Return to the Forbidden Planet. It's a similar kind of thing that you're just like, wow, is this meant to be, are we meant to take this seriously? Are we meant, is this meant to be a hard-hitting political novel? Or is it a space adventure or an intrigue kind of... It's not the first cover because obviously one of the covers of 1984 is like that, you know, and it looks like a pulp thing, but like here's Brave New World, like because it's the original first edition hardback, you know, it's normally looks so much pretty classic, classy, but then when they something like this, so yeah, it's a similar kind of vibe that goes on with this one. So the first connection that we have here between this, I mean, the story is very different because it's not so much a dystopia like 1984 or Brave New World. Yeah, Brave New World is what we're really comparing it to here. But it is set in the future, of course. But it's in the future from what they thought the future was in 1936. So they didn't realize that we wouldn't be flying around in back then the height of technology was seaplanes. You know, people go and they would go into a sea, but of course the Second World War came along and it's like, well, we don't have enough sea to fly all these things to where we need to go. Before the Second World War, airfields were just grass fields, you know, and it was only when they needed to land lots of planes over and over again that they got the hardcover, you know, like the concrete stuff. So this is in a world where, like, the height of technology is, of course, the Zeppelin, is the flying boat, you know, the seaplane that's going over there as well. And is that similar in, because I've not read Brave New World for a long time. Is it similar there as well?
You know, they're flying helicopters.
Oh, helicopters are the new thing there as well.
Yeah, they're flying helicopters, but they're still flying it themselves. I think in that book, they have the zeppelins without
they're self-controlling,
yeah,
like robot zeppelins.
Yeah,
but does it? Yeah, because it talks about the brains of the. It, at one point, it's like the brains of the zeppelin, and that's what gets the key of this book. That it is about. It is about brains, isn't it?
Pretty much.
It's about seeing brains and knowing what goes on inside.
Yeah, it says like it's so like the words in there are so difficult. So it talks about a method that was. Invented at some point when they thought it's a great invention and everything's cool. They called it the Coriolanus.
Coriolanus, yeah, it's another Shakespeare reference. Oh, yeah. Shakespeare reference is all the way through this one.
And
yeah.
They found a way to make thoughts visible.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where you go, is this one of the first predictions in science fiction of the MRI scanning thing? You know, because now it's all the magnetic references. But it isn't that, because it's one of the great science fiction things that they go, oh, now these days, like in the, you know, this decade, we're like, yes. And we scan their thoughts. And what do thoughts look like? And thoughts look like little squiggles on graphs.
Yeah.
Or it looks like a weird network.
Like you have the gray brain scan in front of you. And then you have areas that flush up in like green. And yellow and red, and then you have the front cortex anger and whatever feeling. I don't know.
You go back to the visual processing. That's the time when they actually can map out. It's like, oh, if this little bit flashes here, it means something is going in the top right hand level. Yes. And even with our modern technology work, we do even have a Coriolanus method of our own, which is sit in this tank, stick your head in here. Well, of course, in this book, it's like shoot this ray at this person, and then on the screen comes up what they're thinking. So this is what they actually use. It seems that because this was invented in the past, you know, sort of like in the recent past, and this is one of the big science, this is the main science fiction thing, that you can like use this method to discover what somebody is thinking about. And in that way, and it seems like they've used this to then model the robot brains, even though it doesn't even call them robots. It calls them the machine brain or something like that?
Yeah.
Or is it just the Zeppelin brain or the aircraft brain? I don't even think they call it a machine.
No, they're not calling it a machine at all. This is
before artificial intelligence and all of that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's so weird that like, and it's always the same way in these books, that telepathy comes and I know what you're thinking, and because it's always formatted for the viewer. Yeah. And we realize now with technology that very, very, only the very smallest parts of any technology is actually formatted for the viewer. Like, the whole internet exists, and the only thing that we interact with it is this very thin layer, which is
just the surface of it.
Which is the depth of the screen, and all of the actual interesting technology is going on underneath.
Yeah, and now, only for a certain amount of people.
Yeah, and so, like, the computer hackers and coders and the people who build it all, they see, like, the beginning to end, and we just see the very thin layer just on our laptop screen or on our phone.
Oh, by the way, you don't see it, but, like, Lucas now... Like he's
stroking
his laptop.
Yeah,
I thought you might want to know that because it's quite funny.
So that's what I'm saying. But I like it in all science fiction. It's like they just go, oh, and all that technology, blah blah blah. But what we see is like what's on the screen, even though their screen is a projection. They don't call it a screen either. It's a projection, isn't it? So.
Yeah.
These days, if they had that, it would. What did we watch the other day? Oh, The Ender's Game, and it's one of those. And it's once again he's controlling something, and it's straight out of what's the Minority Report with Tom Cruise?
Yeah,
everything is always like, you know, and they do this, and it's a screen that floats in front of them.
Swipe it along.
Yeah,
and so cool. I want that.
No, you don't, because you don't like here when you use your iPad. You're using your iPad, and you just touch the screen, and you've got some feedback. Now I'm touching my laptop screen, which isn't. But like, what they have there is that they like in even Tom Cruise said himself that one of the hardest parts for him in that movie was keeping his arms up in front of himself and doing all those actions because it's constant moving. Everything is like your arms are out at arm length in front of you.
I understand all this. Maybe that's his problem. But what I really would like to have is, for example, when I'm reading my e-books, I want... Just by the iPad, you want the Coriolanus method yourself.
Yeah.
And seeing what I'm just reading and then turning the page automatically.
Oh, you wanted to track your eye movements down to the bottom and then just turn the page.
Yeah, or with the Coriolanus
method
to actually see where I am with my thoughts while I'm reading it. You know? And then it knows, oh, Now she read this last...
But this is the key thing, again, with this Coriolanus method, what they were doing in the end of the book, which is... I wasn't going to do this, but the spoilers, which this is when...
Don't spoil it.
No, but look, not... I mean, who is going to read this? I couldn't find
it. Yeah, but maybe people will.
Yeah, are they going to find a 1936...
Yeah, why not?
...paperback thing? So, anyway, mild spoiler, is by the end of it, they've done the reverse method, which is with a ray which can control people's brains, which comes all back into the dum-dum-dum, 1984. I realise now this is what it's actually doing, is that the dystopia is to come at the end of the book.
But the whole book through, they treat this as a very, like, it's just a normal, it's a good thing. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah, it's a normal thing, and it's only at the end when it kind of twists round.
Yeah, but you don't really know. It's just like...
Okay, yeah, I guess.
I mean, this could be something that, like, happens or not. It's not really.
What? So they're not going. So it's not going to become a 1984 world.
Yeah.
Or
so it could. It could just.
So you really think that if suddenly the people, again, not, don't want to spoil it, but the people who get control or work out this thing at the end. So there's the two different groups, and you think if the good group gets the power of this at the end, they're going to use it for entertainment and for education. And, you know, and the virtual reality worlds and all that. I mean, of course, that's what I think of when I look back, you know, with this Oculus Rift. You know about this Facebook bought Oculus Rift, the virtual reality thing? Anyway, like that. And Facebook is like, oh, yes, we'll use this for education and for culture.
Okay.
And everyone...
What's Facebook using it? I mean...
Yeah, exactly. It's Facebook virtual reality. It's it's the way of the future.
Awesome. I'm not sure I want
to. Anyway, but that's the point, is like, will it be used for good or will it be used, like I say, if the other guys, the bad guys, what's his name, the worst bad guy ever, Dante...
Invercargill.
It's a Scottish...
Cargill?
Yeah, is Dante a Scottish name? I don't know.
Oh, no, Dante sounds very much like...
Isn't he? Yeah.
Dante's Inferno and like... Who wrote that now?
So it's like a mixture, is it Italian and Scottish or something like that? So I don't know. But it's some of the names that they had, like the main character, Adam Grant, is like, yeah, that's a bit obvious that it's Adam. Adam and Dante, you know, it's a strange thing. Sammy, I can't remember Sammy's name. Samuel's second name.
It's mentioned. I don't think it's mentioned.
Sammy? Or was he just... I know that when he was... When they were across with him, they would call him Sammy. No, Samuel. But otherwise, he was just Sammy. So I don't know. What, you're looking at the Divine
Dante
Comedy?
Dante Alighieri. This is
Alighieri. Called, yes.
So it's quite a fun mix up between quotes, like from Shakespeare and.
But I'm just saying that sometimes it's a little bit too on the surface. Yeah. Like, we have seen better days, which is. I hadn't thought of it that way. That we have seen better days is like seeing better days in other people's, because when you actually see the memories,
do you mean it's not literally, actually?
Well, I thought it was an ironic title for like the end of the book. Like, we have seen better days. It's like, are we seeing better days in the future? Are we seeing or have we seen better days in the past? You know, depending on who gets control of the reverse method or whatever they call it. But I'm just saying that it could actually been, because when they look at the memories and it's like, oh, the better days that they've seen, is it because there's a weird nostalgia kind of thing here for like the Victorian era, because this is a British book and there are some of those like, oh, back in the day. So maybe it is a literal thing when Lila, the older woman or something like that, is she going to be like, she's like, oh, back in the day it wasn't all, oh, no, no, you know, because the Great War, I guess this comes off the back of the First World War, the Great War, so they're kind of looking back to
before
Victorian times, I don't know, but this is actually set in the future, so this is before the Second World War, so it's really strange.
It has very, very many layers of these quote things, like, I mean, to call the bad guy Dante, from the Dante Alighieri's The Divine Comedy.
So he's wanting to put in place layers of hell. So is Dante the bad guy? Does that mean he's going to make 9 layers of hell or something like that? I don't know.
But there are things.
And Grace, what was her name? The love interest for Adam's love interest, Grace. Again, Grace is one of those. You picked up on that as well, did you? The Grace.
The Grace, divine grace.
You know, like that's the thing. Like, what gets you out of hell? So we do have all of these different, like literary things. Because let's talk a bit about this. Again, a bit more of the relation, because you were reading these other books as well, which we're not going to review. So go into that as well, because this fits in with these different.
So I was reading. First, I'm listening to the audiobook of Pandora's Star.
Yes, by Peter F. Hamilton.
And really enjoying it, by the way. Like, it's good. Yeah. It's a pity that I'm not coming, like, I don't have time enough to listen to audiobooks. I'm mostly listening to audiobooks when I'm in the car.
Yeah.
Oh, now I can do it really easily.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, new car.
Bought a new car yesterday. Woo-hoo.
With Bluetooth connection to the navigation. The stereo.
And also, we're living in the future. One of the, we can actually make it sound, because it's got a function on this Clio. Let me just say this. Again, we're a bit of a random podcast here. But the cool thing about this is that you can... Well, it's cool. It's really silly. It's a stupid feature. But because it's so, it's a new car and it's so soundproofed from the outside, it's still quiet. You can't hear the engine very well. So they have this feature that you can turn on, this function, where when you go vroom, vroom, it actually plays through recordings and sort of like simulated of other cars.
Yeah.
So it can play through the sounds of a V6 engine, another sporty engine, a motorbike, this ancient vintage car, which looks like a Ford Model T or like a 1930s race car or something like that. And then the fifth sound or the sixth sound,
it's like a future car.
Yeah, it's a future sound. So it looks like a hover, hovercraft, like this no wheel car. So when you're driving along, the car can actually go, and it really does feel like you're in the future. Anyway,
I listened to the audiobook, which I will do later in the car.
Okay.
And I came across to that section where they talk about the detective and where she comes from.
Paula Mayo.
And it turns out she comes originally from a planet that where they produce genetically engineered people to make them fit into society, what their purpose is.
Yeah.
Just like as in Brave New World. And guess what? The planet is called Huxley's Haven. So, whoa, you have Brave New World, which I'm just reading at the same time, pretty much, and it's written by
Aldous
Huxley. And it's so funny how some things are just connected with each other. So, she comes to that planet, and she's she was engineered to become a detective.
Yeah.
And
a super policeman. Woman policeman.
One of them, because they don't have many of them.
No, I say woman. I didn't say one of them. I said women. A police woman, not man. Okay.
Holy shit. Matter.
No, it does, because I called her a policeman.
It doesn't matter. She's a police person.
Okay.
Anyway, and I'm just reading Brave New World, and actually... some of the ideas that are in that book are really impressive. Like the engineering to make people feel comfortable by playing in their sleep certain hypnopedic whatever they tell them, oh, this is good, this is bad, this is good, this is bad, and they repeat it often enough. That
and does that actually work?
It does. It works perfectly.
In the book.
Yeah. I don't know if it works in real life too. Yeah. But I know that there are these things that you say, learning in your sleep.
Yeah.
Like I was always told in school, just read this page of your book before the exam, the night before, read it and then stick it under your pillow. And then it actually works because your brain is working even when you're sleeping. And also... what I experience is when I do perform a singing piece and I'm singing it and then it's my brain. And then I leave it aside for, let's say, a month and I take it back and it's better. It's perfect.
Without even working. But you're doing other singing in that time.
Yeah, but I'm not thinking about this piece of music. Okay. And then, so this bit of sleeping and influencing brain things work.
Yeah. Actually. So this is what I think... that's why I think Brave New World is, even today, it still feels not relevant, but it feels like it's based in something. Yeah. Unlike, we have seen Better Days, which is the book, by Alexander.
Oh yeah, that's Patriot.
What I'm saying is that the Brave New World still works because the whole genetic engineering. We're like, yes, that's still going. And then the sleep and learning and the pills,
having babies in bottles and stuff.
Yeah, and it says here that on the Wikipedia page, psychological manipulation and classical conditioning, plus drugs and breeding. Let me just finish this point, is that when you put all this together, it sounds like very good, like good science fiction or modern science fiction. It's like, this is what we have here. This is, it's this, 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 and this, plus this equals this. Whereas in We Have Seen Better Days, it's like, and then they shoot this ray at someone's brain, and ta-da, like that. And it kind of misses out the, like, the more of the fundamental. And I think that's why 1984 works so well, is because it explains all of it. You know, explains it's everything that's going on.
It's building up a whole society, and it answers every
question,
every problem. And this is also the other connection. I recently read 1984. Did we do a podcast?
No, I did one. You read it, but we didn't do a podcast together about 1984.
We talked about it before.
Yeah, we mentioned it.
And Brave New World also feels so much like 1984 that's almost unbelievable.
Yeah.
So they have this, in 1984, they have this gin that they're drinking.
Yeah.
That they get for free, and then not for free, but they get in regular slots, and they're drinking it. And in Brave New World, they're consuming this
Soma.
This drug, this Soma drug. And
you're reading that as a German ebook, are you? Or the English ebook?
I don't know.
You don't know if you're reading in English or in German. I can't believe this. Because it's funny, because you're listening to one audiobook, one paper book, and what is it?
No, it's in English.
Oh, you're reading the English version, okay.
Yeah, but sometimes it actually is.
I can't believe you're like 10 pages away from the end of that book and you couldn't remember if you read it in German or in English.
Well, sometimes it's just like I read something and then I'm reading it and think,
You think we've seen better days? Do you think that's been translated into German? No, of course not.
No,
thing is, because it's such one of those so obscure books, but you realize now how influential Brave New World was, where you see it's like all of the same influences. Well, again, I'm not sure how much it's direct influence from Brave New World to We Have Seen Better Days. I mean, like the Shakespeare title, the Shakespeare elements in it, you know. And you can see, and you said as well, like Stranger in a Strange Land.
That was another book that was kind of like... put into, like, you have in Brave New World, you have all these different
things.
What's
the name of the main guy in Brave New World? Is it
Smith?
Is it?
In Brave New World, it's John
somebody.
No, I forgot the name. His name is John,
He's been out on this island all this time and then comes back, doesn't he?
His mother was on that savage island where they have the, like, in 1984 they have the prawls, and it feels so much in Brave New World, these savages feel like the prawls because they are free. They can do what they want and they are free, but compared to the other society they feel like undergraded or like
degraded.
So it feels like they're living in like a savage world. But in fact, they are the free people.
Yeah, they're the free people. Yeah,
and the others are.
And that's the same thing in prose. But what I'm saying is that with Stranger in a Strange Land has a similar thing. You know, it has Michael comes from, he's been on Mars and comes back and then experiences in those two things. So what you could say is that Brave New World is like 1984 and Stranger in a Strange Land put together.
Yes.
But it came first, so it's not like you understand
how.
You
can really see that.
But that's what I'm saying. It's such. It is. I don't want this to become. And it's weird to do it because you're reading Brave New World at the moment, so this is becoming a Brave New World show. But I think again, this 1936 with this We Have Seen Better Days is almost a complete like reaction to this. It's the similar. It's like, oh, I can do that as well. I will do the. You know, I will have the literary influences and stuff. But in the end, it just comes off. I know it's weird. We haven't even talked about the story very much. Just about the setting and things like that.
Yeah.
But the story comes off as quite a. Like, just this silly spy adventure thing in the end. But it's a spy... It's interesting because it's a spy adventure. It's a spy adventure where you can see people's thoughts, you know. So the twist that was coming at the end with... I'm not going to say the twist, but it is one of those things that you just go, oh, that's great. But, like, if you can see people's thoughts... I mean, it's very much about mind control, but it's all the way through until the end before they get the reverse... Coriolanus method thing. The mind control is internal because people know that they have to control what they're thinking because of this brain thing.
But again, this turns up in 1984 as well,
Winston Smith, he's
trying to control his own thoughts.
Yes.
And this is a similar
thing. I hadn't really made that connection while reading the book.
Yeah.
Again, because I was thinking more about Brave New World when reading it than 1984.
But this is very much like somebody trying to make their thoughts
fit. And again, I think this is why 1984 is remembered and We Have Seen Better Days is just, you know, goes back into the, you know, it's just faded away. Nobody knows about it. Is because when, like, in 1984, you can see the method of mind control. Like, they have the view screens everywhere. They have the microphones everywhere. They're keeping track of people. Yeah. You know, that scene where he's doing these exercises and they say, number 7892 Wilson, Smith. Like, yeah. Get there. And he's like, oh, holy shit, like that. Yeah. And then he understands, you know, like, he's writing his journal and doing all this kind of stuff. Whereas, you know, it's like George Orwell putting the homework to be able to put in place, like I said before. And We Have Seen Better Days, it's just like, oh, and they just happen to have this. It's like a shortcut. It's like they don't need to, like, it's like, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could just see what people are thinking?
Yeah.
And in 1984, it's like, oh, how hard would that be? Oh, that would be really hard. And Big Brother, it becomes this big theatrical production and world controlling thing. Yeah,
and so. did you also see, like, I found really quite a fun connection too, because we're also reading the Enam Banks books with the drones having their emotions in colors.
Did you read
that the thoughts that they make visible are also coming up in different colors,
like
depending on like how the emotion is with the thoughts, because you can think something just like seriously, or you can think something sarcastically, or you know. And this is also a fun.
No, that works. Yeah, that's with the kind of like, if it's a, because if it's a memory, it said it was a different color when it was a memory. Then if it was a current thought, it was one color, and if it was a memory.
So, but then it's really funny like in the Enam Banks book with the drones, their only way to express emotions is via the
aura fields,
the aura fields and the colors. Yeah. So they are very obvious.
Yeah, I hadn't made that connection with the culture books. But
which
that
really funny.
Yeah, because I didn't. I know it's weird to say this as well now, actually, because now that you said the projection machine that showed the thoughts, there was no color TV back then, was it? Was that color? I mean,
no.
I guess they had the cinema was color, was it? Like, what? Type in Wizard of Oz. Because then we can see. Well, that was one of the first big uses of the Technicolor or something like that. When did Wizard of Oz come out? Is it going to come up?
Oh, it's in 40s, 50s, isn't it?
50s, no. No,
1939.
Yeah, so now that makes a lot more sense. You understand? This was in 1936. So I'm like, Wizard of Oz wasn't the first color movie, but it was one of the earliest big things where they go, no, really, this is where color is,
or something like that.
So this is actually the same time as like color cinema. Like, you know, you've had the talkies, you've had the color motion picture film. I'm sure it'll come up with something. This is fascinating podcasting, isn't it? Us looking up.
Yeah, it's like going from somewhere to somewhere else.
Oh, yeah. Someone is that's early additive. So, but I'm saying like when they actually not hand coloring. So it's not hand coloring. It's actually when they did
additive color.
No, not that. No,
subtractive.
No, color. Need to go further down than that. It'll be 1930s.
Mono color. What?
Anyway, that'll be around about the 1930s. I'm pretty sure how modern color film works. So anyway, I'm just saying that the idea of pictures in color is new. The idea of thought control and that kind of stuff is new at this time. Anyway, do you have anything else to say about this? The themes, like, again, the themes are like, what is in this other book, that famous book that we've read, and this guy is, that Alexander Petrock has done? Because I haven't.
How did you like the writing, like the language?
I thought when it was concentrating on just the action and the characters and talking, like the dialogue, there were some really fun turns of phrase, but it's kind of very English. Like, again, it's like a very British kind of sensibility of this. Oh, look at this. Ah, okay, this. And then there's it's like the token American character, Sammy, young Sammy, and stuff like that. And I thought a lot of the interaction was good. Where it fell down for me is that I wanted those more emotional moments that tied in with the world building, you know, like what we have in 1984 or
Brave New World,
yeah. What we have there is those kind of more emotional things. You get those times where they kind of break down and it's like, I can't take it anymore, I need to do this. Like, I need to... Yes. They have those kind of emotional outbursts. If it's with Winston Smith having sex with...
with a girl.
With Julia and stuff like that. There was some, like two-thirds of the way through, there's like that emotional hook in the book that then drives through to the end of the narrative. And I never really felt that emotional... connection between any of the characters. They were kind of like stock characters who were like, and now I will go over here and I will go
used for the story, like used for
it was like, hey, this guy's got a fun idea with the Coriolanus method, he's got a fun spy story where people are gonna, you know, the guy, he goes over to France at one point and then up to Newcastle, when they actually do that kind of thing, It's perfectly serviceable. It feels like, you know, like, oh, now James Bond goes here and then does this. You know, just move around. And in these other books, it would be like, oh, and then he got on the train. And as he was going up there on the train, he thought this. Although there's not trains in this. It's the aeroplanes and the zeppelins and stuff like that. But it was like, oh, and then they took the zeppelin here. And I was like, oh, no, but what does the zeppelin mean? Or like, do you understand that? I wanted just a bit more depth to it. It felt a bit too pulpy.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't be a problem, except that it clashed with the more, you know, all the Shakespeare references and some of the names. Exactly. You know, it's like there was a mismatch between the two of them.
Yeah. So,
anything else to say about it?
No, I thought that the biggest thing was the Shakespeare, the quote thing, which was so outstanding.
Yeah.
And the connection between all the other books I just recently read.
Yeah, it was like, difficult to get them out of your head when you're reading something like this. Okay. Well, if that's all we have to say about it.
Are you giving a rating for that? Or is it like...
I know. It's one of those average books where you just go like... It's really difficult
Some parts were enjoyable.
Yeah, some parts were enjoyable. Yeah. Some parts were not. I mean, I don't want to just go, oh, 2.5 stars, because it's not really, it's like when you say that kind of thing, it's like, well, why wouldn't you just read 1984 again? Or, why wouldn't you just read some of these, even though Brave New World, I don't find that an amazingly fun book to read. It's certainly, like, why would you read the knockoff when you can just go back and read the original, you know, kind of thing?
Yeah.
Do you think of it in that way? I mean, it's fun, but it's so short and it's so, you know, it's hardly even a novel. You know, you read this book in the time, I know I was going to say Pandora's Star, but that's a massive book as well, isn't it?
Yeah, like, it's a huge thing. So it's like
this is one of those books that you can just kind of slip in between others. So I wouldn't even worry too much about it, you know. So I'm going to, I'd say somewhere between 2.5 and 3, but the thing is, it's just not a book for me, you know, in that way. What would you say, 2.5 stars?
Yeah.
3 stars?
Yeah, 3. Let's give it 3.
Okay, I'm going to give it 2.5. So let's call it 2.75 stars.
Yeah, that's good.
Let's break it in between. So that'll be one of the first 2.75 star books. So anyway, that's it. What do we say here? Email me, luke@juggler.net. That's great. If you want to discuss this book or anything else, you can become my friend and Juliana's friend on goodreads.com. So go on there. Type in Luke Burridge or Juliana Kunzendorf and you can find both of us there on Goodreads. And the best thing to do is to actually look up what other people, anyway, I looked at this book on Goodreads. There has only ever been one other review of this book in the entire history of Goodreads.com. And they didn't even rate it.
No.
So it's just someone marked it as read and didn't even give it a star rating. So this is not a very well-known book. So, anyway, goodreads.com. You can discuss books and other things with other SFBRP listeners on the SFBRP listener group there. You can follow me on Twitter at Luke Burridge. What else do you have to say?
The next book we're going to do is probably Matter, isn't it?
Matter. Oh, yeah. In our culture read-along, we'll do Matter. Yeah. I finished two books by Rudy Rucker in a series, Wetware and Software. I'll probably get to them next. That'll be my own thing. We're going to do Ender's Game because we watched a movie of that.
Oh, yes.
And you're going to read Ender's Shadow. And I'm going to listen to the audio drama version. We'll talk about different versions of Ender's Game. Otherwise, email me, Luke. I said that already. I think that's it.
Yeah.
Oh, and also check out Audible. audibletrial.com/SFBRP.
I don't know the English. I'm listening to the German version of Pandora's Star, but I'm sure there's an English version.
Yes, and it's meant to be very, very good. It was a very, very popular Audible title as well. So if you want
and to, it's worth it.
If you want to help support the SFBRP, you can check out Pandora's Star for free. You just sign up and you'll have a month to listen to it, which is actually a long book like that. It's taking you a month to get through it. Anyway, audibletrial.com/SFBRP, Pandora's Star, or one of 200,000 other audiobooks for free, and by signing up there for an account, just a trial account, you don't even have to sign up for a full account, like a recurring subscription, like I do and Juliana does. But in doing so, you can help the SFBRP, you can fund our book reading habits, even though this book cost us €1.50, because when we return it back to the bookshop later on today, we get all of our money back minus €1.50, which is the great thing about the bookshop around the corner. Anyway, now that's it. So say goodbye, Juliana.
Shall I say goodbye, Juliana?
No, just don't make don't do a bad joke.
Goodbye.
Okay. And I will see you later. I will see your thoughts later. No, they didn't read this book. They don't know. So, anyway, catch you later. See you next time.